Our first public reading has come from Psalm 94, and we're simply going to entitle this, Vengeance Belongs to God. And as we read Psalm 94, the psalmist, whoever he was, we don't know, apparently either he as an individual, or maybe he amongst other believers at that time, who were separated from their people because of their actions and their conduct, the light and the salt that they were possessing at that time shined too brightly, or their salt was too salty for either a relative or a friend, or maybe a co-worker at that time. And there was the clash between light and darkness, evil and good, okay, God and demons, whatever. Or he's talking about an invading army. That's a possibility. But notice verse 1. This sets the stage. O Lord God, Lord is in caps, meaning Jehovah. The word God is Elohim. So in the Hebrew, you would read, O Jehovah Elohim, to whom vengeance belongeth. O God, to whom vengeance belongeth. Notice the direct plea, and it's sharp. Show thyself. If we were to put that in modern English, we would say something to this. Lord, the enemies are in a multitude and they're on a rampage. Come to our aid now. Show yourself to be who you are. Destroy these enemies. So number one, notice that it's not you and I taking up a baseball bat and bashing heads in the street. Vengeance belongs to God. So if there's somebody in your life who's a thorn in your side, and it could be friend, family, co-worker, whatever, student, friend, teacher, whoever, and this person gets under your skin and scratches so hard that they're aggravating you, the Christian response is not to strike out, though that may be in your thoughts. The Christian responds by taking that person into the prayer closet and saying, Lord, this is my enemy. And their assault is getting under my skin. I am your child. And Lord, I simply turn that person, all persons, over to you. Take care of them in your own good time and way. And then you simply walk out of that closet and you leave that person in God's hand, or that family, or that neighbor, or the co-worker. Lift up thyself, thou judge of the earth. Render a reward to the proud. And then notice his plea. How long shall the wicked, how long shall the wicked triumph? And when you look at human history, what do you find? You find evil people, evil leadership, marching evil, brainwashed soldiers off to the battlefield to be chewed up like pulp with the other invading army over a little piece of land. I love history, and in World War I, 10 million young men died in that conflict of 4 years. Generals would have these poor dudes, 18, 19 years old, go over the top, run through barbed wire, and the Germans would have their pillboxes on an angle with the newly invented rat-tat-tat machine gun, and just go back and forth at the knees, chewing up guys. And I have a documentary that I have on disc where they've interviewed World War I veterans back in the 1990s who were 100 years old and older, relating their stories when they went over the top and ran and survived, talking how one guy was running in an open field, a guy right here and a soldier right here, and they're hoofing it with their guns while the bullets, the guy turned this way and this man's head was gone. He turned this way and this man had a hole in his chest while he kept running forward. How long, Lord? How long will evil progress? Look at verse 4. How long shall they utter hard things, and the workers of iniquity boast themselves? They break in pieces thy people, O Lord, and afflict thy heritage. So verse 5 shows or tells you on this particular psalm who was the one receiving the kick. Notice, thy people, your heritage. And so if we take that into a New Testament application, that would mean anyone who comes into your life and they know that you're a believer and they know that you're true and faithful and they know that you're consistent in your walk with God and you cherish Him for what He has done for you. And yes, church is important. It's an important aspect of your Christian walk. Beloved, they're not going to like that light and that salt that comes out of your salt shaker. They don't. So you are the victim in verse 5, the church. They slay the widow and the stranger and murder the fatherless. Amos takes up that issue in his day. Isaiah will take it up. Jeremiah will take it up. And all the prophets, major and minor, had these grievances with God's covenant people. But look at verse 7. The snapshot now turns to the ones who are now assaulting you. Notice the arrogancy of these people. Yet they say, the Lord shall not see. They're actually claiming that God is blind, or God doesn't really care. God is more concerned about what's going on in South Africa while things are being blown up here in Western Europe. God is focused over here, and He really doesn't care about you and your prayer closet whining and bawling and complaining about your host of enemies. He's got greater fish to fry. Look at that arrogancy on the enemy. Neither shall the God of Jacob regard it. Whoa! God don't care about you. Have you ever had that thought whispered in your head? Maybe with that little fallen demon on your shoulder, and then that good angel is on the other shoulder, and that good angel is trying to reassure you that in the moment of darkness, and in the moment of fear, and in the moment of loneliness, when you think that God has kicked you to the curb, you got that little demon, God don't care about you. He don't care about you living in Northeast Kansas, and you have these concerns about, for He don't care about you. He's got bigger concerns in the universe. Ever felt that way? Let's be honest. Oof. And then notice the Christian's response. Understand, ye brutish among the people, and ye fools, when will ye be wise? Ooh. And then notice, this verses 9 and 10 is the rebuke on our part to what they say, what they said in verse 7. They're saying, God don't see and God don't care. How does the Christian respond? What, a baseball bat? No. He that planted the ear, shall he not hear? What did we learn last Sunday? He who has an ear, let him hear. That New Testament phrase can hearken all the way back to the Old Testament thought here. God is the one that made the ear. So if God made the ear that hears, that means that God hears as well. He that formed the eye, shall he not see? He that chasteneth the heathen shall not be correct. He that teacheth men knowledge, shall he not know? So verses 9 and 10 is the rebuke response to those who would utter verse 7 in your face. Okay? If someone comes to you and they're a thorn in your side and they enjoy rattling your cage because they know how to push your buttons to get that response. Oh, you say you're a Christian, but you just responded that way. You said that unkind word. You gave me that dirty look. You walked away. Our response is this. You say God doesn't care. Well, see, my God is the God who made eyes and ears, which means He can see and He can hear as well. And He will chasten the heathen. He will chasten them. And then we get back to reality. The Lord knoweth the thoughts of man, that they are vanity. And when you read the book of Ecclesiastes, what was the main thought there by King Solomon? Vanity of vanity, all is vanity. Blessed is the man whom thou chastenest, O Lord, and teachest him out of thy law, that thou mayest give him rest from the days of adversity until the pit be digged for the wicked. And so God does chasten us when we sin. Just like a mother or a father will chasten their own children or child if they step out of line, God does not chasten the wicked. He punishes them. Listen carefully. God doesn't punish his own. He chastens in order to get them back on the path that they apparently skipped off for whatever reason. Some temptation got them off of the road, if you will. The unbelievers, God doesn't chasten because they're not on the right road. He punishes them for their iniquities. Big difference. The Bible always uses the word chastening in its context on the saints. But then there's more to this psalm. This psalm just has power pack. For the Lord will not cast off his people, neither will he forsake his inheritance. So there's your security. When you do have an enemy, or you have a family that is your enemy, or whoever, beloved, they're not going to be able to touch you. They can rattle your cage, they can call you names, they can insult you, they can besmirch your character, they can make all kind of falsehoods about you, and they're not going to stick. But judgment shall return unto the righteous, and all the upright in heart shall follow it. Who will rise up for me against the evildoers? Who will stand up for me against the workers of iniquity? There's the cry of the saint in his closet. Unless the Lord had been my help, my soul had almost dwelt in silence. When I said, my foot slippeth, thy mercy, O Lord, held me up. Notice, in times of adversity, in times when the enemy is pounding at your door, the saint flees to his closet of prayer and beseeches and cries to his God. And this man is saying that when it got so bad, when he felt he was going to slip into silence, that's another way of saying death, my adversaries have pushed me to the point beyond despair, death. Death would be a blessing. The Lord caught me. He caught my steps. He kept me from sliding. In the multitude of my thoughts within me, thy comforts delight my soul. Shall the throne of iniquity have fellowship with thee, which frameth mischief by a law? How many legislative laws do we have on the books today that are eating away at our freedoms that our founding fathers gave us? They gather themselves together against the soul of the righteous and condemn the innocent blood. But the Lord is my defense. There it is. Now, do you see how the psalmist goes in these moods? He's in that valley. He's just whining. He's just complaining. And then he shoots right back up. Unless the Lord was with me, I would slip. Then he goes back down in that despair. And then he goes right back up to that next mountaintop. We find this pattern in this psalm over and over. He's now back on the top. But the Lord is my defense, and my God is the rock of my refuge. He shall bring upon them their own iniquity, punishment, and shall cut them off in their own wickedness. Yea, the Lord our God shall cut them off. That phrase is never used against a believer. God never speaks that way when a child of God wanders off the path. He sends down the spiritual paddle to get him back on the road. But when it comes to these type of enemies, it is cut off. The Hebrew here is very intense. We can almost use the expression shock and awe, slash and burn. The death angel comes and does a clean slice of their soul. That's what that phrase, cut off, annihilated. So my dear friends, you're going to have enemies, please. We're not going to whitewash the gospel here this morning. You're going to have enemies, and those enemies are those who at one time may have sat around a table of food. We love them, you pray for them, but you don't surrender your convictions for them at all. Christ must come first. And if you do that much, beloved, they're going to automatically not like being around you. And when you pack yourself into a car to go off to church, they're going to remain where they're at. Just wave. Well, there they go. Beloved, they're on very thin ice. Very thin ice. Well, may God choose to bless his word.